It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
Yes, Aaron Rodgers said right to my face, you don't listen very well. Well, I listened to this segment. It's 7-2.5, the Professor John Anderson with Jason Wilde, and I listened well. Good evening, Jason.
Good evening, guys. I'm glad I was able to tune in just in time to hear your desire to see long-distance runners throw the shot put.
Yeah. I admire wrestlers the most, and I admire track people the second most because I competed in both and was horrible. But they're just incredible athletes. All right, Professor, take it away.
Well, first off, like, as an Oregon guy, you have to now be a track and field person. Otherwise, you can't claim to be a true Oregon kind of person.
Yeah, I mean, I've become a track person thanks to Maddie, who, you know, ran eighth grade track and seventh grade track and now ran cross country at the varsity level. So look, I've covered every sport during my career. I think it's so good for young journalists to do that. And that included covering a Golden Gloves boxing match in which I sat ringside and a guy got punched and the blood splattered across my laptop.
Whoa.
In 1996. And having to run down the main street in Racine trying to find a landline phone in 1996 to file my story to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I've covered the track meet, the state WIAA track meet in lacrosse as a preps writer. And there are so many events going on and so many kids and so many good stories that I've always liked track, but I'm a little bit more partial to it now that I obviously have a track athlete.
Of course, you know, the most famous quote is, have you ever heard of Jones Ramsey? He was the late great SID at Texas for many years. And he used to always say, the only thing more boring than track is field. So we move on. Of all the things that I took offense to this weekend, Jason, and believe me, I watched Missouri lose in the last waning seconds to South Carolina, blah, blah. I think Matt LaFleur not kicking the field goal was one of the most egregious coaching errors I have seen, and I don't know how long. Did we get an explanation, let alone a reasonable explanation, for what the hell he was thinking?
We did, and I thought it was great because I asked him on Monday, with 24 hours now to kind of reconsider.
Right.
Do you still feel like you made the right decision there? And, you know, he's not always the most revealing guy. And so I took it as a big win that he actually admitted that he went to the analytics people in their, you know, numbers department and wanted to know if it was the right decision or not, because he completely ignored them. He didn't care. Like he's kind of a throwback that way. Like, you know, my guy, Mike McCarthy, who is obviously his team is circling the drain. But he became like a analytics convert. Now he's like Johnny Analytics. And well, what do the numbers say? And LaFleur is, you would think as a younger coach, he would be all about that. And instead he literally said, I don't care about that in his answer yesterday. And he went to the analytics folks. They said it was 2 or 3% more likely to win if you went for it. Now, again, I don't understand why that would be, but as he admitted, that means it's basically a flip of the coin. And so I would have taken the points. You make a 19-17, your defense gets a stop, and you can win the game with a field goal, 20-19. Now, obviously, they ended up winning 20-19 anyway, but it doesn't come down necessarily to Carl Brooks's left middle finger if you kick the field goal there and then you go get a field goal again. So who knows? But the bottom line is that I thought it was the wrong call, and it could have come back to bite him, and because it was the Bears, it didn't.
All right, I got to interrupt. He pulled a Campbell. There's no way he makes that play if Campbell was not doing what he's doing in Detroit. Next.
You think?
Interesting. You think he's influenced by the riverboat gambling style?
1,000%. We're as tough as they are. I'm as tough as he is. Watch this. Because it made no sense.
I hadn't thought in those terms. You bring up an interesting point, which I don't always feel like I can say to you.
Back to the professor, please.
Listen, I'm all down with some analytics. I think there are times they are great. I always look at baseball advanced metrics, and I'm like, I get that works if you're trying to figure out who guy 18 to 23 on your roster is, but the best guy, like Robin Yount's analytics, pick one, he's still going to always be the best Brewer because he was the best Brewer. It was just mystifying to me, the entire thing of how that went. What I can't figure out is, and I don't know, as you watch that, like the offense didn't play terrible. They did everything I think they were supposed to do, other than you have a pick and you have a boneheaded coaching move, which ordinarily you can survive, except when you only have essentially six possessions. And all of a sudden now you mucked up a third of your game. And what happened, right? Otherwise, if that all happens and they have 10 possessions, I don't think anybody thinks anything of either of those two deals. I don't know.
No, you're right. And that's why the game is really on the defense, right? I mean, look, they lost the time of possession battle 37-23. And by the way, the Bears didn't have a ton of possessions either. They just kept the ball a hell of a lot longer on them, right? I mean, look, the Bears, this stat, and I brought this up a few times now because I just think it's so mind-boggling. The Bears were so bad on third down coming in. They were 6 of 40 on third downs during their three-game losing streak. 6 of 40, that's 15%. And against the Packers, not only were they 9 of 16 on third down, but three of the times that they got stopped on third down, they picked it up on first down.
Did it again.
Right? And they got it. And so you're talking about in 16 situations where you could have gotten off the field. Yeah, you stopped them on 7 of the third downs, but three more got converted. So now we're looking at basically 12 of 16. That's 75%. That's horrible against a team that was struggling. And so, you know, and I'm not a Halfley disciple per se, but I am definitely a believer that he is an upgrade. But his group, you know, they knew, rightly so, that they were going to see the ball get out of Caleb Williams' hands more quickly than previously, right? Because they knew after the last guy got fired following a game in which his quarterback got sacked 9 times at Rooney's office, they weren't going to have him hold on to the football. But the fact that they were not ready, and Kenny Clark admitted it after the game, they had not planned for him to run on either designed runs or pull it down and run runs the way he did. And that caught them by surprise, which it's surprising to me that that was so surprising. So, look, they didn't play well. Go ahead, John. Sorry, I'm rambling.
That's the thing he does best so far is that.
You're right. So I'd be curious to know, like, we're going to talk to Halfley on Thursday. And one of the things that I really like about him, it's also a difference from Jordan Love after Aaron Rodgers. Jordan Love, like, just a bad throw. Like, I love the fact that it is, you know what? I just screwed up. Bad decision. Bad throw. And Halfley's the same way, whereas Joe Barry was not. I'm eager to hear what he says about that defensive performance because, you know, if that had happened against the Lions, you would say, okay, well, the Lions are hanging 50 points on a bunch of people. They played the Lions pretty darn well, especially without Evan Williams and Jair Alexander. Obviously, on Sunday, they ended up without Jair again, which that's something that I need more answers on. But I thought that their defense was better than what we saw from them in Chicago. That was disappointing, to say the least.
All right, I have a question because I need you to answer, Jason. My answer is the Bears. Well, the Bears. Huh? I know the Bears are that good when Williams plays that well. I mean, the Bears are close to as good as the Packers when their quarterback plays like he did. If he's that good, now we'll see in the next couple of weeks. But don't you say the defense, they weren't great, but if Caleb Williams plays like that, then that's not really that bad a defensive performance. Or am I wrong?
I would say anytime you get 12 of 19 on third and fourth down, that's that bad a defensive performance. I think that's indicative, no matter who you're playing. That to me is a telling stat.
But how many did he do it with his legs?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
That you're not prepared for that guy to run because that's his athleticism is part of what he does. And the fact that at the end of the game you have third and 19, you finally get pressure, you have two sacks, and yet somehow you go, you know what? All you got to do is make sure they only get about 8 yards on this third down and not 16. And you put them in position. No, I thought there were some horrible defensive things that were the Packers' fault and not the Bears or Caleb Williams doing well things.
Yeah, and let's be honest, when the cards were on the table, you know, they get the back-to-back sacks, right? T.J. Slayton gets them, then Rashawn Gary makes an appearance, which we haven't seen enough of from him. And then it's third and 19, and Kingsley Enagbare has him dead to rights, and he, like, basically goes over him. So he's able to escape Kingsley. He's able to complete, what was it, a 16-yarder to Adunze to make it fourth and three. And then he follows that by hitting Adunze again for 21. Like that, to me, hey, great, you finally sacked him because he held on to the ball. But then third and 19, to allow that conversion, given that you could have ended the game there, that's not a good. That's bad. And then if it's not for Carl Brooks's middle finger, they win. They lose the game to the Bears like that. He's making that kick. That is this guy. He's not Cody Parkey or whoever the double doink guy was. Like Cairo Santos is good, and they lose that game to the Bears. And they've now won three of their seven games with the clock striking 0:00. And that's great that you got to win those games. And when you do, you sit there with 7-3 records. But on the flip side, the Bears, to Homer's point, have now lost two games that way. One with their knuckleheaded safety taunting the crowd, and one with their kicker getting the field goal blocked with a chance to win the game.
So all that said, hey, look, they finally found that Christian Watson can make plays.
Yeah, I'll say this, and you know, I felt Inquisitor's remorse yesterday because I didn't need to take a shot at Romeo Doubs, and I did, and I didn't really. I don't know if this happened to you in the thousands of episodes of SportsCenter that you did, but it came out of my mouth, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that out loud. When I said to LaFleur, you know, what does it mean for this team and for Watson to have that kind of a game? Here's a guy who never complains. He's not, he wasn't involved enough in the offense, and you didn't see him stay home from work. He just kept working. And I didn't feel great about saying that, but it's the truth. And I wrote about him today for tomorrow's State Journal, and the quote from Josh Jacobs after the game talking about how, yeah, you know, he had a great game. It was great to see him step up. But how humble this guy stays when he's not getting opportunities, you know, that to me, I've just been so impressed with Watson's character, especially. And look, we're all, you know, all of our parents are different. And I've met your mom and she's amazing. But I get the sense that Christian Watson's dad is a lot to handle. Right, with how much he's on social media, et cetera. And Christian is just, he's so above all that. And I just respect the hell out of him for that. I mean, even with a 150-yard game, that accounted for nearly 40% of his total yards this season. Yeah. Like, he still only has 20 catches. And that, I think, is a point of contention because both LaFleur and Stanovich had said 3 weeks ago, we need to get him more involved. And it took until this past Sunday for it to actually happen.
I said to you, Homer, right? I maintain he's the best athlete on the team.
I maintain he's a special person, even if he ran a 20-second.
I think both those things are true. I think both of those things are true.
Right. And then Josh Jacobs just shows, like, he has been worth every dollar they've paid him. And listen, I love Aaron Jones, and if they keep him, I still think he's great. That's not to say he is the one-for-one replacement. I just wanted to know that for bringing him in, that guy has earned his keep, don't you think?
He has, and especially since last year, obviously he dealt with some injuries and some unhappiness mm-hmm. in Vegas, which basically everyone who works for that franchise feels that way. but you know, he has, as an Aaron Jones supporter myself, you know, and as someone who for about 45 minutes along with Tausch had the mistaken impression in March that they would have both those guys on this team, he has been everything and then some. And again, going back to kind of what we're talking about character wise, like he has been like, this is a guy who in Jacobs who has forced Marshawn Lloyd, even when he was on IR, to ride to practice with him every day so they could talk and he could support him and give him tidbits of information that could help him. And as the locker room neighbor to Edger and Cooper, is always talking to Cooper about, all right, as a running back, here's what I'm trying to do to you. Here's what you got to be ready for. Like, there's a reason why the guy was a captain with the Raiders. Him and McKinney were captains with their previous teams, come in as first-time Packers, and both have been outstanding in that department. And I don't throw the word outstanding around very easily with leadership, because I think there are some phony leaders that say good stuff to the media but don't engage with their teammates enough. These guys are both top-notch in that department, and so is Watson.
Thanks, Jason. Got to go.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde, all Packers all the time. Yeah, if Aaron Rodgers was listening, he'd say, damn, Homer, you actually listened decently that time. Yep. It depends how good.
I ask what you were doing that he told you were not listening well?
He said something, and I didn't respond in the appropriate manner, and he just assumed I must not be listening, as if I wouldn't think that.
I will tell you about a not listening comment when we come back.
Yeah, the professor, 7'2.5", next.